Hello and welcome. This is Home Life for Extraordinary Impact. My name is Matt Barriot. I'm a husband, dad, researcher, writer, and coach based in San Francisco. And on this show, I explore global perspectives on home. What is it that people do around the world, experts or everyday folks, to help their home really feel like home? That's the sort of research that I'm doing on this, and for that, I get to have amazing conversations with so many different people from so many different walks of life. And today, I am very grateful to host and have as our guest my interviewee, Farah, who is currently, I get to talk to as she is in Dubai. So thank you so much, Farah, for, it's early in the morning for me here in San Francisco. It's later in the evening for you. Thanks for staying up late for this. Thank you so much for being a part of this.
No, thank you. I'm so happy to be here, and it's absolutely fine. It's a pleasure to get to talk to someone across the world, courtesy of technology and all that it provides.
Absolutely. It is such a blast to get to connect with people around the world and build network in that way. It's so fun. So one of the first questions I love to ask people when I'm interviewing them is, what are the things that you do in your home that really help you really be you? You know, maybe it's, a strange hack or an important way that you exist in the space, or favorite objects or something like that. What do you do?
So I think, since you talk of home as a space, right? So it's kind of the physical space that we occupy. It has to be neat. It means that whole get up in the morning, make your bed. I abide by that. Yeah. I kind of think it just makes the room look neat. I love things to smell nice. So I have humidifiers across the house, and I put lavender essence. So you wake up in the morning and you've got the fresh smells. And every week I go out and I buy flowers. Now, for those of your listeners that know, Dubai is a desert. So buying flowers comes at a premium price, It's a price I'm willing to invest to make my space just look pretty, and it makes me very happy. So the flowers make me smile.
Yeah, that sounds beautiful. And I love your attention to these details that help create an environment that is clean and tidy, but also smells good and looks nice. Yeah, it's amazing how much those... What's that? I'm sorry?
It's an ambience, right? So you create an environment which, if you're happy, you thrive, and it just lifts your mood, I feel. Mm-hmm.
I love that word ambiance, because it is such a thing based in actual things that happen, in a space, like, putting flowers out and, having light music playing or whatever it might be. But in some ways it's that bridge between something that is tangible and something that is a quality of life thing.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's indescribable, and everyone would experience it differently, right? But I'm super sensitive to smell. For example, if I walk into a space and it doesn't smell nice, immediately I can feel, my inner dynamic shifting, and I'm not, best pleased, or I'm not happy, or I can feel the slight tension sort of creeping in because I'm not comfortable in that physical space.
Yeah.
And I'm very visual, so I sort of take in the surroundings and I notice and I observe, and little details would make me like a place or not be as, comfortable in a space. So for me, the little details matter.
That's amazing. It sounds something like a design eye, actually, in many ways, is that attention to details visually and in the senses. That's really amazing. How did, where do you think that originates from you? Like, where does that come from in your story, that kind of attention to detail and so on?
So, for your listeners, I'm a Parsi by faith. Parsis are Zoroastrian. We came from Persia. I was born in London, and then I grew up in India. And my grandmother was, so I grew up in my grandmother's house. My mom separated from my dad when I was quite young. And my grandmother had this amazing attention to detail, like white serviettes and cutlery and crockery, and don't put your elbows on the table, and the flowers, and, tea time and brownies and cucumber sandwiches. So she comes from that generation of grannies. And, you know, don't waste food, and you're not allowed to leave the dining table unless you had finished your dinner. So that was my upbringing. So she was very particular about things around the house. So I think through osmosis, I definitely absorbed that. And she was very house proud. You know, the house needed to look nice. We were always ready to have guests over. People dropped in all the time. There was always food on the table. And, you know, part of how we show love is by feeding people, overfeeding maybe, but food is a huge way of how we show love. So I think part of it stems from there, growing up in India. And then as I've grown up and, you know, morphed into myself and become the individual that I am with my own likes and dislikes, I notice as I've grown older also more being more particular about things and observant. I've always been observant, but I think the little things now matter because it's the simple pleasures of life. You know, it doesn't cost a lot for a room to be tidy or for it to smell nice. You light a candle or you spray some, you know, room spray, or in my case, I put in lavender oil in the humidifiers. It's just, it's the little touches that can, to me, make or break a situation or a space or a environment for anybody. And I just, it makes me happy, so I do it. And hope others, you know, people come into, even in my office every week I take flowers and I've got a little humidifier version there. And, you know, people come in and go, your office always smells so nice. And for me, that's, you know, the nicest thing they could say to me.
Yeah.
So yeah, it just, it makes me happy.
That's wonderful. And I love even how, you know, this long history of attention to the home and keeping it in order and being house proud. I'd never heard that that term before, but it makes sense. I know exactly what you mean when you say that. As well as the attention to the simple pleasures that may not cost a lot, but by adding them to the home, they help it feel that much more like a place of belonging that you want to be. Especially adding that to your work environment. I bet people love that.
Yeah, they do. And sort of I take the flowers in every sort of start of the week, and the end of the week I gift the flowers to one of the team members on the floor for them to take home and enjoy over the weekend, because the flowers are still haven't quite lost their bloom, but it adds pleasure to someone else's home for the weekend kind of thing. And then I refresh the vase on a Monday morning. So yeah, it's a nice little tradition that we've got going.
That is so beautiful, and including just the way that you are mindful of the way that, you know, the office environment can bridge into the home and be a gift to the home. Like that is really special.
Thank you.
So, you know, clearly, like you have a very interesting background that spans the world, right? Farsi background, Persian background, Indian background. Now you are in Dubai. So what have you learned through your travels, through living in these very different places, about the different ways people, you know, treat home in these different environments?
That's such an interesting question. I mean, I'll give it from my perspective. So I was in London till I was age 4, Persian faith, you know, British national, but Indian heart is how I would describe myself. So when I was 4, my mom took me back to see my grandmother, who I just referenced, and we ended up staying there through a series of circumstances. My mom left my dad, and I grew up in India, went to an Irish convent, the same convent my mom had gone to. So it was, you know, the same teachers were still there. And it was a very interesting upbringing. Now, Parsis, even though we are in India and we're part of the Indian tradition and the cultures, we are a little bit different because our customs may be different, our ethos may be different, our values may be a little bit different. So our home, if I think of spaces and I think of homes, you know, there's always been this sense of my grandmother's home was run as it was very welcoming. You know, it was ready to receive guests. We were very hospitable. Food played a huge part in feeling where you're at home. You know, you sort of remember the meal your grandmother would cook or your favorite meal, or you'd be asked what you want for lunch or what you want for dinner. So food is very intrinsic to me, to a memory of a place I would call home. In India, so it's all about, India's very sort of open homes, right? They're not as closed as, say, England. England, they're sort of preserving against the cold, so it's slightly more sheltered. So it's a different way the homes operate across. But I think that sense of hospitality and that sense of welcoming and warmth and love and affection, I think that is universal regardless of which geography I've happened to be in. And that, I think, pervades whichever home I've happened to occupy or create or cohabit. And today in Dubai, it's the same. It's extremely hot outside. So the doors
you're not protecting from the cold anymore.
No,
that's for
exactly.
Sure.
We're protecting from the heat and the humidity. And the AC's on. And I remember, you know, like in the older day, my mom would say, oh, my grandmother, you know, close the doors. You're not cooling the environment or heating the environment, whatever the situation was. Yeah. But equally today, you know, I want my home to be a place where it's a refuge, it's a sanctuary, it's somewhere you're happy to be, you're comfortable, and it's open to anybody. Like any of my friends know they can drop in at any point. There'll be always be food, and they'll be looked after, and hopefully visually and sensory, it'll be a treat for their senses as well.
I love it. There's a value in your home, this like hospitable refuge, right?
Correct. Like, yeah. That's a really nice way to sum it up. Yep.
Yeah. So it's about like, hey, whatever the climate may be, whatever the circumstance of life may be, you know, you can come here and you can belong and be safe. And also, I'll feed you.
I'll feed you a lot. I'll feed you a lot. Yeah. That's wonderful. Bake a lot, so my friends always know there's always cake, there's always some biscuits, there's always some treat ready to serve.
So, wonderful. Gosh, yeah. You're making me want to visit Farah.
It's only a plane ride away.
I know, I feel like through this project, I'm just collecting a lot of people I can visit around the world. You know, maybe one day I'll do the grand tour.
Not a bad place to be, yes.
So, okay, now... these many environments that you have lived in, from London to India to Dubai, have kind of birthed in you these sort of values around hospitality that's also kind of coming from your heritage and everything. Now, again, sort of zooming in on home, now maybe from a different angle, because mostly we've talked about like, oh, having these delightful scents and, you know, having food on the table and so on. That's when home is going really well. But when home it has gone sideways, you know, which inevitably happens for all of us, what does that look like or feel like for you?
So home is definitely my emotional base. Like it gives me my emotional strength. You know, at the end of a day at work or outside, or even if I've traveled, I look forward to coming home and being in the physical space, but also just regrouping within myself. And my family and my immediate family and my children, you know, my relatives, they're very dear to me. So I'm very family-oriented, if you like, or very close to them. If, God forbid, anything is not going well in their lives, or if there's a health concern, you know, with the people, I immediately know that I'm not settled, because my mind is occupied with making sure they get better soon. And sometimes it's out of your control, right? You can't control the outcome. Things take their time. But for that duration of time, I know that I am not as relaxed or peaceful as I might be when things are going smoothly. Similarly, in the physical space, you know, 47 degrees outside, you know, 70% humidity.
Yeah, yeah.
If the AC is not working, I am not happy.
I don't know who could be, honestly.
Yeah, so it's just one of those things. For me, it's about making sure everything operates smoothly and it's just seamless and it looks effortless, but it takes a lot of effort to bring simplicity, to make an environment function, and to bring that simplicity to how it operates around you without, and it's almost invisible to you, the little things that are happening in the background to make it operate the way it does. When any of that is not on track, I can feel it. Like I immediately am out of sorts, a little bit imbalanced. I know I can get distracted. I know it's not a great feeling for me. So I always strive to bring it back to whatever that state of equilibrium is, so that I myself feel settled inside of me.
Mm-hmm. I think you are highlighting the reality that I think many of us experience, which is that home kind of needs to be this sanctuary for regrouping within our own internal world, our emotional well-being, and so on. You mentioned that sometimes it's because of relationships, you know, like things people are working through, that you care about them, so that affects you. I imagine also like work and the kind of stresses of work might be the kinds of things that affect your emotional wellness. Are there any things that you like to do when it does feel like things are kind of off or sideways that help restore you?
So I think yoga is one of my big go-tos, but, you know, it doesn't have to be yoga for other people, but yoga I use as moving meditation. I'm not brilliant at just sitting still and meditating, but yoga is moving meditation. So it's the same result in terms of switching off the chatter in your mind and just helping you be present where you're at and internalize into your body and observe what's going on inside of you. So especially like yoga's part of my weekly ritual, but if I'm feeling particularly frazzled, I'll take myself off to class, definitely, for sure. The other is just nature. I love going to the beach. We're blessed in Dubai that we have access to the beach, so I might just go to the beach for a walk or sit in my garden, and comes back to the flowers, the nature, to be surrounded by nature just helps center me as well. But yoga, exercise, if I've had a really rough day, the first thing I do is come and have a bath, because I just feel it washes you, washes away the remnants of whatever the stress or the experience or the interaction might have been, and then take it from there.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, that's, I feel like such a very thoughtful list of things that you know help you, right? From yoga to being outside to taking a bath. That sounds very nice and delightful. I feel like I might need to try some of that with a 1.5-year-old at home. I feel like, you know, there's a lot of just catching up and the need to catch a breath. And
Interesting when my kids was, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you, but I was going to say, when my kids were younger, and especially as you're describing, where it's almost that need to catch a breath. And my mother used to say to me, Farah, you need to meditate. And I was like, Mom, I've got like from 7:10 to 7:15. And that's my only window of opportunity. And how do I make it work? But as the kids grew a little bit and there was a little bit more free time, I started the yoga practice that has stood me in good stead. And now looking back, she was so right. You know, that was the time I needed it most, but I didn't prioritize it, or I didn't have the tools to make the time for it, which comes back to what you're saying about catching a breath. And you were going to say something else about the other day.
Just the other day. I do think there's something to physical movement being an important layer to that, and clearing the mind through that. And the other day, I hopped down to the gym, and I spent 3 hours at the gym. Because it happened to be like this day where baby's in childcare. I have a, you know, pretty empty schedule on that morning. And I just relished in getting to take time, hopping in the pool there and lifting weights and doing cardio. Just like did every corner of the gym, right?
And to make up for all the lost time.
Exactly, right. Yeah. And
overcompensate. Yeah.
Exactly. That's exactly it. I swear, I was telling my wife, like I was just telling her, this has been the most luxurious and best day. And it's because.
But it's the simple things. You got to spend a bit of time with yourself and on yourself to replenish, you know, what gives you happiness. So it sounds like you enjoy all of that. So it sort of fills the cup, so to speak.
It certainly does. And in a different way than I think it used to. I think it felt like a chore to go to the gym and get a workout in or something. But now it's like, oh, this is like spa me time, you know, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
changing, having kids changes things, right?
That is true. Puts it into perspective and your priorities change, right?
So, So, you know, thanks for letting me tell you a little bit about me during your interview for a moment, too.
That's fine.
I'm also interested in the interplay between people's homes and their work. And, you know, you've already mentioned, like, getting flowers and that interesting point. But what do you see as the link between your home and your work, Farah?
So I think someone once said to me, you know, people at work might be like icebergs. You only see the tip. You don't see all of them. And I think that might have been true of me as I was younger, but I think as I've gotten older and as you get more comfortable in your skin, and I read somewhere, your body is your home, right? The physical body that you inhabit is the home for your, call it soul, your spirit, but the individual that you are lives in this sort of structure, right? And when you're carrying that home to another location and you're interacting with people, I've brought all of me to the office as I've gotten older, because I'm comfortable, I'm okay to be seen, I'm okay to share. There's less of the worry of the judgment or the criticism that might have been more inhibiting when you're younger. So I've talked about my office. For me, it's an extension of my home. If I spend 8 hours, 10 hours, however many hours in a space, a physical space, I want it to feel nice for me. So, you know, there's a little Nespresso machine because I want decent coffee. I've got the flowers going. I've got the lavender going. Yes. I've got a little poster on the wall that sort of says some things that resonate with me and I can read and reminds me. I mentioned I bake a lot. So every week I take cakes or cookies into the office and treat the team to that. So it's kind of you bring all of you to this other physical space that you inhabit. And the same sort of hospitality that I would exhibit at home, I'd want to exhibit in the office. So whether it's the open door or people coming in or always having a sweet or a biscuit or a chocolate or whatever, if someone's come to talk to me, to be able to offer them, wow, or would you like a coffee or whatever, and creating an environment that smells nice, has pretty flowers as a reference point. It's an extension of me and my home. You know, that's the way I look at it. And, you know, every morning my little ritual to change the water in the vase or to change the water in the humidifier and top it up with the lavender. It's the little things that takes me that 5 minutes to settle in before I get to my emails. And then the day just, you know, you zoom through the day, but in an environment that allows me to be me and keeps me sustained.
Honestly, like hearing you describe that, I'm like, how do I work with Farah? You know, I'm just like, you just sound like the ultimate coworker, you know, the ultimate boss. Like, you know, it just sounds incredible, actually, for you to bring that level of attention and hospitality to your work environment. Like, that's so beautiful.
Thank you.
And you mentioned, too, that, like, this idea of, like, being at home in your own skin and as you've grown older and become more comfortable with yourself, this is something that you now, you know, home is a thing that you carry with you, perhaps.
Correct.
And that sense of hospitality. What was the, you know, the process of developing that for you? Because I know that's not, I don't know if that's people's natural mode of operating.
Yeah.
So yeah. How did that take shape for you?
It's kind of a long journey. You know, the gray hair will tell you it's taken a few years. I think, so I got divorced 10 years ago, and that was a journey also for me to become more comfortable, to just be me, you know, when you, and it just so happened the same week the divorce was filed, I got made redundant from where I was working. So your two greatest identifiers of who you are when you introduce yourself, I'm Matt, I'm a researcher, I'm a father, I'm a, you know, certain touch points that define who you are in your mind and how you introduce yourself. So if I'm no longer able to say I work at X or I'm a, you know, whatever role or position I might have been, and I'm no longer attached to anyone, I'm not the wife of anyone, then you have to inhabit Farah, right? Who am I and who is this individual that you meet and what do I stand for? So it was a bit of a journey to find out who I was, what my values were, what I stood for, be comfortable in it, be comfortable to just not have any labels attributed to me, to be who I am as an individual, and then be okay to be seen. For a long time, you almost are in hibernation as you're working it through. And it's only once you're ready to be seen that you can come out and say, okay, this is all of me. Yes, I can bake, and yes, I can be good at my job, and yes, I might like fashion, and, but I also want accuracy, and I want really nice-looking slides, and, you know, all of that. But yeah. I can be the sum of all of that, and I don't have to be any one thing, or, you know, I don't have to be a narrow sort of linear version of whatever it is. I can be all of what I am, you know, whether I like to bake or I do yoga or I'm good at my job or I lead a big team or, you know, whatever it might be, that is who I am. And I'm comfortable with that. You know, it's not, it comes with a sense of humility as well. You know, it's all grace to me. It's not bravado about it, but I'm okay to be all of that.
That's amazing. And it is interesting to me. The catalyst of this new awareness way of life for you had to do with this stripping away, actually, of some of those things that you had built identity around and felt comfortable labeling yourself according to and so on. And that is, gosh, a painful process in so many ways. I'm so glad to hear that you use that as an opportunity to find yourself, your values, the things that you care about, and including those things that you might have been embarrassed to represent about yourself previously, right? I know I have plenty of those things, right?
Yeah.
But just to get to show up fully, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's a bit of a rebirth, but hopefully, you know, we're through the other side and we're happy to be here. And we're happy to be who we are.
Love it. And I know a big part of what you are doing now is you are also writing, you're an author. And I would love to hear more about maybe even that connection between this journey of discovering who you are, feeling at home in your own skin and so on, and the connection between that and becoming an author.
It's an interesting correlation that you're bringing together. And it's very astute because, again, it's about being seen, being ready to share with the world. So the book is called Meher and Me. It's available online for your listeners that might enjoy reading it. And it's a tale about my mother, who was called Meher, and myself. And she was a very unconventional lady, made different choices at a time when it wasn't the norm to separate 50-odd years ago at a small town in India. She trained as a lawyer and she practiced law. She wore trousers in a city where most of the ladies were clad in saris, you know, used to smoke and was very sort of forthright and very opinionated and very strident in some of her viewpoints and stood up for the rights of women. And that's how she came to lose her life. She was murdered, shall we say, in my hometown of Lucknow by some sort of petty criminals. And it was a situation that I describe in the book. And then when you face that kind of tragedy or trauma, it again is a journey to find your way back to, you know, some place. You never go back to normal, I don't think, and you never stop missing the person. And as they say, time heals. I don't know if it so much heals as allows you to come to terms with it and find a way of being where the sort of the vacuum or the hole or the loss is always there, but you find a way to operate around it, you know, whilst that sort of hole never gets filled by anything else necessarily. And again, the book was written. I didn't publish it for a long time because, again, I think it was about being ready. Life is also about timing, right? But it was about being ready to be seen, ready to be able to share that story, and ready to be able to talk about it with yourself or, you know, on other forums. and be happy to answer questions and be able to relive the emotion, but without the charge, perhaps, mm-hmm. that was attached to it at the time.
Yeah. To hear about such a traumatic experience that you had. And how old were you when that happened to your mother, when she was murdered?
So I was 36, so yeah. Not exactly young, but I don't think there's ever, ever grown up enough to lose a mother.
Seriously.
And she was kind of the foundation of my life, and my father was not very present as a parent. So she was really the only parent I had. It was a big, huge loss to this day. You know, if something good happens, the first person you'd want to tell is your mother or your parent or whoever is witness to your life, right? It's one of those things.
Gosh, I'm getting misty-eyed thinking about this and thinking about my own mom. And yeah, so thank you for, unexpected emotion connecting in you telling this story. So thank you very much. I think the, let me just regroup for a second, take a breath.
Yeah, it's, I really hope you get to read the book. I really hope you enjoy the story. It's really a very simple story about a mother and a daughter. And, it's never going to be plain sailing, that relationship, child-parent, yep. Right? Through the teens, through the angst, through as you become an adult. But it changes with the seasons. It changes. Mm-hmm. And in the end, we were friends. And her loss was made that much harder by the fact that we had that relationship. All have stories with our parents, right?
Absolutely. And it had gone through all the ups and downs and found a place of settling in friendly relationship as adults, it sounds like. Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, Farah, thank you very much for an incredible interview and also telling us about this book and, the story of your mother and you. Now, as we are wrapping up, I just want to give one, final opportunity. If there's any encouragements that you have, before we ask the final question, but, are there any encouragements that you have for people about their homes after, even talking about home, reflecting on it in this conversation? Any final encouragements?
I think, we all have different tastes, right? So whatever your taste might be, the home is a reflection of who you are, right? And it should be the best version of you, I feel. Like, it should be the place you want to come home to. It should be the place where you're happy to bring people into. It's a space where you can relax, where you regroup, you get recharged. And it just is your safe haven. That is home for me, wherever that space might be, right? And I would also encourage people, for me, it's not so much a physical location, one physical location, right? I feel equally at home in India. I feel equally at home in London. Dubai has my physical home today, and I'm at home in the city as well. But it's also finding that space within you where you're comfortable in your skin. So no matter where you go, you'll make your home and you'll carry your home with you.
That's wonderful. Those are words to live by. Thank you very much, Farah. And for people who are interested in being connected with you or, want to hear more about this book, for example, how can they be connected to you?
So I have a website, farahpress.com. So people are very welcome to come and find me. And I invite people to share stories. So if there are any mother-daughter, mother-son stories, please share with me. I publish blogs on there, and if they subscribe, they will get them to their inbox. We have Instagram, so you can find me at farah.press. I am posting about the book, and there are excerpts from the book, and just you'll follow my journey as I am promoting the book. So would love to have your listeners find us and follow us and be part of the journey.
Wonderful. Thank you. I will take that information and put it into a blog post that will be a companion to this episode. So all anybody will have to do is click into the show notes. You'll find a link to a blog featuring Farah and all of that information and more. So thank you, Farah, for a wonderful interview. As I finish things up, just a reminder, this This podcast, Home Life for Extraordinary Impact, is a project coming out of my business, Home Life Design Lab, in which I am on a mission to help 100 million people transform their quality of life at home. It's an audacious goal, but that's what I'm after, because I know how just thoroughly true it is that the home is the foundation to a quality life. As much as we might try to locate it in other places, work, relationships, or anything, if home's off, then life is off. So if this connects with you, I would love for you to follow along with my blog and newsletter at homelifedesignlab.com. And if you have been listening to this podcast for a while and you want to support the work and get some extra perks as well, I urge you to become a premium subscriber to the newsletter and to the podcast. There are ways to do that with links in the show notes as well. So thank you one final time to you, Farah, for your, your sincerity, your honesty, and just being a person who has lived a really remarkable and intriguing life and sharing that with us. So thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Wonderful. All right. That's the episode, everybody. So until next time, take care. Thanks for listening to Home Life for Extraordinary Impact. I hope you enjoyed listening as much as I enjoyed putting it together for you. Please take a moment to rate it, like it, and subscribe wherever you have listened or watched. If you really loved it, check the link in the show notes to become a premium subscriber to support the ongoing work of this project and to unlock some exclusive premium episodes. Home Life for Extraordinary Impact is a project of Home Life Design Lab. Find out more at homelifedesignlab.com, where you can sign up for the newsletter and follow along on Instagram and TikTok. Thanks.